Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right here with Carlos Toro. Now, Carlos, what you don't realize is this is such a special occasion to have you, because this is the first ever broadcast that we've done on both channels at the same time. So as Carlos knows, Fight Game, the title of one of the networks, it's a boxing term. I got it from there's a really good book on Sugar Ray Leonard versus Marvin Hagler. It's called Sorcery at Caesar's or something like that. And basically the book is about how Leonard kind of outgamed Marvin Hagler in all facets of their fight and eventually ended up winning, which in of itself, he gamed his way through that. If you've ever watched that fight, stealing rounds and such at the end. And so I think it's in the introduction. I forget who the person was, but they were asking him, you know, how did Leonard win? And he says, oh, Leonard just put the fight game on him. And so I took that term to create Fight Game Media. And we also have our sister network, BSPN Media, which is a sports network. And I just figured, like, you know, I'm sure people who listen to the Giants and the 49ers and the Warriors and the Valkyrie stuff, some of them may be boxing fans as well. Some of them may be UFC fans. So whenever I do a boxing show like with Carlos, which we're going to try and pepper these up a little bit more than we have been, and also doing a UFC show, which I do with my buddy Paul Fontaine before some of the big UFC events, I might as well just simulcast them on the sports channel to see how those do as well. So that is the goal. This is a test, an experiment. And Carlos Toro, you are the first guest in this experiment. So how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. I feel like in the last 36 hours, I probably aged about 20 years because I'm a Yankees fan. And tonight's game and yesterday's game, I don't think I've ever gone through stress as much as I have these last two games. Like, October baseball is such a different, like, and also I feel bad for all the Mets fans. I mean, I think Andrzejczyk is a Mets fan.
Yes.
I can't imagine what he must have been feeling this entire series with the Dodgers and Yankees. Oh my God. I wanted to scream because they blew a 4-run lead again, and they somehow pulled off the win.
They did. We're on a sports network, so we might as well just bring it up. Do you believe in this Yankees team? Do you feel like they are a World Series team? Do you feel like this is, you know, in the historic annals of Yankee baseball? Like, is this team worthy of those other teams that have won World Series championships?
I mean, when you, like, compare it to, you know, those core four World Series and those, you know, DiMaggio and Mantle teams from, you know, from the past. I mean, like, honestly, it doesn't really compare that. I mean, could you look at the current makeup of the team? I mean, Juan Soto, Judge, they're Hall of Famers without a question. Giancarlo Stanton probably is going to be a Hall of Famer. They got and Gerrit Cole's on his way to having a Hall of Fame type of career. Like, the team is littered with stars. It's just, it's kind of a, it's a weird makeup, especially with the postseason, because, like, Judge is not a good postseason hitter. Stanton's come in alive, and they've been bailed out by the fact that American League just not been that strong this year, if I'm being perfectly honest. And in the in this current Yankee team, I mean, historically, it's probably not going to fare well when you compare it to the other 27 teams that won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, listen, if they end up winning the World Series, I will take it. I was 14 the last time they went and won the World Series. I'm not waiting until I'm 44.
It's amazing. It's amazing. All right. We are here to talk about baseball, but I'm very happy for you to possibly see, maybe a World Series team in the making. On the other end are, you know, my most hated team in Major League Baseball, which are the Dodgers. So, you know, if it is Yankees and Dodgers, I won't buy a Yankees hat, but I'll definitely be rooting for them. So, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about some boxing, and specifically the fight last weekend, Dmitry Bivol versus Artur Beterbiev, which I know you love this, the undisputedness of titles. And, you know, you a while ago, you'd written some pieces on, like, how do you get to an undisputed champion in all of the different weight classes? And you also wrote, like, you know, what are the odds of that actually happening? Well, in this case, like, this fight was for the undisputed championship. And I guess for the first time in the four belt era is what they said. So pretty big fight. And did it live up to the billing for you?
In one word, no. The fight was kind of awkward. It felt for long periods of time that neither guy kind of got into that second gear. It took Beterbiev all the way till, like, the championship rounds to really start, you know, winning rounds in the way that we're usually accustomed to. Bivol was never an exciting fighter. You know, you know, if you're a fan of Bivol, it's because you know how gifted of a technical boxer he is. And at times, you know, his jab early on was, you know, looking crisp. It was landing pretty effectively. But the problem with, you know, but he never really dominated the fight. There was no one throughout the entire fight that you can say, like, yeah, no, this guy clearly has dominated the fight. But it wasn't like super hotly contested. It was like both of their guys just kind of fighting their own game, and it just never really, from a, like, you know, from an entertainment, from a highlight standpoint, it never really popped off the way you would think it could have. Mm-hmm. Beterbiev was landing his shots, but it wasn't like those, like, crushing blows that it, you know, that turns his opponents inside out that we've seen throughout his entire career. No, it, you know, really wasn't. It was landing good shots, but Bivol's got such a tremendous chin, it's almost impossible to kind of rattle him in the ring. And Bivol's a smart enough boxer to not stand in the middle and trade with Bivol, with Beterbiev. Bivol, his game style, especially with Beterbiev, is just to jab away and, you know, right as Beterbiev's about to throw, just get out of, just step back and be out of distance. And that's kind of what's more or less the game plan. Didn't make for a great fight. I guess it made for a newsworthy ending because of the scorecards and everyone's overall reaction to it. But, you know, no one's gonna, you know, if there's a rematch, I mean, it's because it's the two best boxers at 175 pounds, but it's not because the world demanded a rematch because the first fight was that good. It was not that great.
Did you feel, obviously, this fight is made, and this is all what, you know, Rida season is about, is the idea that we're going to give these guys more money than is probably sensical in order to put these events on. And so that's why you can have these guys facing each other for the undisputed title, because it would not make sense to not do it based off of what the offer is to put the fight on. And there is risk, I think, in that, because now you accept that money and it's like, oh man, now it's put up or shut up time. Like, I can't do anything other than have this fight against this other great fighter. And what I sense now, I will admit, I watched the fight after I had already known what had happened. It seemed that both guys were pretty tentative early on. Mm-hmm. Bivol, because he is the overall better boxer of the two, I thought there were moments where he looked really good in and he the way that he moved around. But as I was watching the fight, I couldn't help but notice that he was fully in the rhythm and style of what Beterbiev wanted him to be. Beterbiev was leading. He was moving Bivol around, and Bivol was moving out of the way to not get hit with certain punches. And it was sort of like a stalking versus the stalker versus the stalky kind of fight. And as I was watching it from that perspective, you know, sometimes the counterpuncher or the guy who's like, you know, doing outboxing or moving better or sliding better and not taking these punches flush, sometimes it looks like that guy is actually like just out slicking the power guy. And I didn't actually sense that in this fight. What I was sort of watching was like, Beterbiev is eventually going to hit him. Bivol's going to be able to move out of the way of a lot of it, but eventually he's going to get him just because of the way that he is stalking him. And when I looked at it from that perspective, I was like, I guess I can see how Beterbiev won this fight. But if you listen to the announcers, for the first half of the fight, they thought Beterbiev had it in the bag. And then all of a sudden they switched to the Bivol side. And I was talking to you off air. I said, you know, I think it had to do with the betting odds that they kept putting round after round. It was like, you know, Beterbiev had the better odds, and then it got close to even. And then the next round it was Bivol. And once that happened, then Tim Bradley, who was like team Beterbiev for the whole fight, just turned the other way and was talking about how, this is what Bivol does. And all of a sudden, Beterbiev, who was doing everything right, now he's got to close. He's got to win these last two rounds. He possibly has to knock this guy out to win this fight. And not to say that, you know, the betting odds or whatever, the information that they have, should be influential. But I thought it was kind of fake in a way, because he didn't really trust what he was seeing because he didn't want to be wrong. And then he ended up being wrong anyways, based off of what he thought was going to happen. But the fight was close. It was, you could have, if I had not known what the score was, I probably would have leaned slightly to Bivol. But I think that's just how I watch a lot of fights. I lean a little bit more towards the slicker boxer, the guy with the better movement, the guy who's the slicker counterpuncher. I just kind of lean towards that anyways, the way that I watch fights. I thought it was a coin flip. I was like, when they read that first score, which was the draw score, I was like, that feels more right than the other two scores that came out, which had Bivol, I think it was 115, 113, 116, 112. Beterbiev. They had Beterbiev winning. And so I thought the draw score was a better score than those other two.
Yeah, I mean, 116, 112, Beterbiev is almost inexcusable, if I'm honest. I can see the, I initially had it 7-5 for Bivol, 115, 113. And, you know, and like looking back, like I can see maybe like closer to a draw. It kind of, in scoring the fight, it was interesting because, you know, if you think of it from this aspect, Bivol's strength is being the better boxer. And he clearly was that for large portions of the fight. And Beterbiev strength is knocking guys out.
Yeah.
And he was not knocking Bivol out. I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's 1 a.m. over here, but I don't think, if memory serves me correctly, Bivol was never even like hurt. So there
were two moments that I remembered where I thought he kind of had to catch his breath a little bit.
Yeah, he was like momentarily staggered.
Yes.
Beterbiev never like fully capitalized on that. And secondly, you know, Bivol, you know, recovered pretty quickly from that. But there were moments where he was like a little bit off balance. So when you look at it from the standpoint, it's like, okay, Bivol was doing his job as being the better boxer. Beterbiev was not knocking Bivol out. So a lot of people would probably tend to lean towards Bivol as, you know, Bivol was doing his job inside the ring, and Beterbiev was not, because, you know, a lot of people would think that, like, okay, if this goes to the scorecards, B-Ball's going to win this. You know, we've never seen Better BF go to the judges as a pro because he's just been constantly knocking guys out. And one, and also, you know, Better BF's about to turn 40. He is coming off of injury. I think it was like a meniscus injury or something like that. So his body was sort of, you know, was sort of in doubt, or his health or his ability to be at 100% at that age with the wear and tear his body's had. So, like, you kind of look, put that all into perspective, you think, okay, then you're probably going to lean the fight towards B-Ball. But, you know, but when you actually look at the fight, you never got a sense that any one guy was dominating at all. Yeah. It was one of those, it was one of those, like, yeah, you can, you might lean towards one guy, but you're never 100% confident in that. The only exception being like the last couple of rounds, or Better BF definitely was gaining more life and was hitting better shots. But overall, you know, the scorecards can, or I didn't have a big problem with 115, 113 Better BF, but I think that was like maybe as far as I'm willing to let it go. 116, 112 Better BF, I really can't explain it.
Two fights that I was thinking about. Now, it's not exactly the same, but I remember after the first Canelo Golovkin fight, I thought, okay, these guys really respect each other. They respect each other's power, and maybe they fought a little safer than, you know, they possibly would have if it wasn't Golovkin versus Canelo and the loser had a lot to lose. And the other fight, and this one was a little bit different, but if Better BF had won the fight, it would have, I mean, if B-Vol had won the fight, it would have been the reverse of Ward and Kovalev, except Ward did get knocked down in that first fight, which then he kind of came back. But I was watching it from the perspective of there's a lot of respect in this ring. And it's almost like the person who lost, they were very clearly knowing that, you know, they weren't going to take the risk to possibly, you know, lose badly, I guess, because of the status, because of the top guy versus top guy. So, and sometimes we see that, especially in these big fights, because there is so much on the line. There are so many people watching. Now, this fight wasn't watched as much as like Golovkin versus Canelo, but no one wants to look bad, right? So you don't take the chances, you don't take the risks. At the end of the fight, though, you see Bivol's eyes and you're like, huh, he took more punishment than we realized. I think did he try to say that the bruises on his eyes were from blocking punches that got blocked back into his own
face? Yeah, it was something to agree. Like, Better BF was, a lot of the shots that he was landing, it wasn't landing on Bivol. It was landing on his gloves.
Yeah.
And because Bivol had his gloves up a lot of times when Better BF was throwing, Better BF is like, has like incredible power that like I can legitimately believe that you can definitely give someone a black eye by hitting a blocked gloved hand before, and the impact of that alone damages the face. I can absolutely believe that. And it's funny because I was in on this group chat with a bunch of other boxing pundits, and we kind of almost came to that same conclusion that it was like, he wasn't landing a lot of shots cleanly, but man, even the shots that were blocked did damage. And I think that's something. And I think that's, again, a credit to Better BF with like the insane power that he has, even at this age. I mean, there's a reason why he was 20-0 with 20 knockouts coming into the fight.
Yeah. And I don't know how much punch stats are necessarily an exact science. It seems like there's a lot of guesswork in them still about what you conclude, and unless there's more technology in the gloves than I realize that allows them to be a little bit more precise. But what you were seeing in the early rounds was that Better BF was throwing way more punches and landing way less punches. Mm-hmm. But as the fight got going into the later rounds, he was still throwing more, but he was also landing more. And I think the punches landed near the end of the fight were very close. And if you're just watching with the naked eye and you think about the difference in the power, I could see very clearly people ringside, especially who may have seen the fight in Beterbiev's hands. And, you know, going back to what you're saying about the power, you know, that's the thing that I, you know, when I score fights on television or whatever, it's really the one thing that you can't tell that people who go to boxing events say is the reason to go to boxing events is you can just see the power distance and hear the power difference very clearly. So it's quite possible that if you're in person watching that fight, some of those shots that Beterbiev is throwing and landing just feel different than the ones that Bivol was landing.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who's attended a lot of boxing fights, you know, at ringside, at eye level, up in the rafters, like it is a different viewing experience. If you, especially if you're like trying to score a fight or you want to score a fight, it's very different watching the fight live. And there's even different ways to watch it. And when you're watching it in person, just because of the different eye levels and the angles and the perspective compared to television. And it, yeah. And if you're kind of looking at it and you're, I guess, more paying attention to see like, okay, when are the power shots going to come from Beterbiev? And he starts landing a few of them. That's when you kind of make maybe start to lean. Okay. You know, he's land, you know, Beterbiev maybe being slightly outboxed, but he's landing the harder shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a crowd of people that will put that, you know, over everything else when it comes to scoring the fight. Some people will score just based off who landed the hardest shots, and some people will based on like, okay, who was the one that, you know, dictated the pace and controlled the action in the ring. And sometimes it's just a matter of like who just threw more, who threw more punches. It's a very, you know, there is a criteria when you're actually when you're a judge and you're supposed to score fights. But, you know, when you talk to like the majority of people, they all have like very wildly different ideas as to what actually wins the round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
So, what is the fallout from this, do you think? After the fight, Bivol was very respectful. He thought he fought the fight he was supposed to fight. Didn't turn out in his favor. Gave credit to Beterbiev. Beterbiev was like, I'm probably not the best boxer out of the two, but, you know, thanks to the God that I pray to, I won the fight. You know, that neither of them are English speaking as their dominant language, but I really appreciated that they tried to do those interviews in English. I thought there was a charm and a likability about that. So I really appreciated that as a viewer. Do they do it again? But like you said, it wouldn't be because the fight was great. It would be because, you know, the politics or there's no one better or whatever, because otherwise, like what else is out there? You said if Bivol doesn't win this fight, you don't see Canelo even being that interested in that fight. Mm-hmm. So what are the options here for both these guys?
Man, it's kind of an interesting spot that we're in right now. So for those of you people don't know, the way with the when you're undisputed champion in boxing, what it means is you're holding all four of the major sanctioning title belts: WBA, WBC, WBO, and IBF. So each of those sanctioning bodies have their own mandatory challenger. So like the number one rated guy in their own respective organization rankings, they automatically get a shot at the title. Now, when someone is undisputed or just holds multiple titles of those organizations, there's kind of like a bit of an internal rotation that that's kind of like agreed upon conceptually. Okay, all right, this guy was waiting the longest, he'll get the first shot, and then you kind of move on, so on and so forth. In this instance, it's kind of interesting because you have multiple guys who are multiple sanctioning bodies that have interim champions. Don't ask me why we have multiple interim champions, despite the fact that neither guy was like out of action for like a year and a half or something like that. So we're now kind of in a bit of a bizarre situation. So David Benavidez is the interim WBC champion. He's fighting, or it's very soon going to be expected that he's going to be fighting David Morrell, which is, in my opinion, the two best guys at 175 that are not Artur Beterbiev and Dmitry Bivol, with the idea that that's going to be on one of those PBC pay-per-view in a few months, although that should be coming up very, very an announcement should be coming up very soon. Joshua Buatsi is the WBO interim champion at 175. So now we're kind of in this interesting little scenario. Okay, so Buatsi could try and, you know, force his way in. I mean, I'm sure that the win, David Benavidez would want to get the next shot of champion, but he's already going to be fighting David Morrell. So he's going to have to be waiting his turn. I mean, Buatsi would be an interesting choice because Buatsi lost to I'm thinking of someone else. I'm thinking of Anthony Yard, who's okay. So this is gonna be interesting. So I don't know if you can follow me on this, Garrett. Joshua Buatsi is the WBO interim champion, but he's not the number one contender in the division. That's Anthony Yard, who's the number one contender. And you would think, well, the interim champion, not the full champion, so he should be the number one contender. Nope, that's not how it works in boxing, unfortunately. So Bivol is currently basically and his team are pleading to the four sanctioning bodies, give us the rematch. Their reasoning is that most people thought that Bivol actually won the fight as opposed to Beterbiev.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is, okay, you know, Morrell and Benavidez are fighting each other. So that takes care of the mandatories, quote unquote, at 175 for the WBC and WBA. You have Michael Eifert, who's the number one guy for the IBF, which shouldn't be a concern unless the IBF says, no, Beterbiev, you have to fight our number one guy right now. And they have no problem stripping Beterbiev of the title if that's the case and Beterbiev doesn't follow through. But there doesn't seem to be any noise coming from the IBF side regarding forcing Beterbiev to defend his title. So I think he's safe on that side of things. So now it's really just making sure that everything's kosher with the WBO side of things. And I think a rematch is possible. I wouldn't discard the idea of an immediate rematch, but they probably would need to get that squared away really, really quickly before some of these sanctioning bodies like, well, been a while. Beterbiev needs to defend his title against our mandatory guy. So, at this, it's a question of when the sanctioning bodies are going to agree, okay, is Bivol, are we going to grant Bivol an immediate rematch? Because the problem is, you grant Bivol the rematch, the fallout is going to be even worse with even the, with the sanctioning body, because now everyone's going to be like, we've been waiting our turn. You're giving this guy who's not the top contender, like on the rankings, another shot. We've been waiting. So now that's when you're going to start to get into the chaos. If there's a rematch, what's the fallout on that? But I probably would put the rematch being as not likely. It's still kind of touch and go, but I think it, but I think a rematch, it's possible. I think it's definitely in the cards.
Would it be another one of those scenarios where it happens, but it's going to have to be Saudi Arabia bringing it together like they did with this one?
I think it's going to have to be. I can't see this being something. Well, the problem is like, obviously, you can't hold a fight in Russia. No way. And I don't see, you know, Canada, which is, you know, better be as kind of adopted home country. I can't see Canada being the place you do it. And because of how lukewarm the first fight was, you're not going to get that much attention in terms of attracting people in the U.S. to buy tickets and go ahead. And I mean, if the first fight was exciting, you can maybe try to see if you can bring that fight stateside.
Right.
And I guess that's still, I wouldn't discard that, but I think it's probably more likely to just say, well, you know what? We'll just have the fights here in Saudi Arabia. Why not?
So it looks like, at least for now, that book is closed, and we'll just sort of have to figure out where they go from here. You mentioned that earlier before we even started recording that there's some Tank Davis news as far as who his next fight is.
Yeah, so with Tank, it has not been announced yet, but everything seems to be pointing towards the next fight being Lamont Roach, which it's going to be, which I think would be a solid card. I think it's, I think it already has been announced not too long ago. So it's going to be, you know, Gervonta Davis versus Lamont Roach, for Davis's, lightweight title, with the idea being, I think in December in Houston, it's going to be one of those PBC on Prime Video pay-per-view cards, which, I mean, at that point, it's going to be another $70, $80 behemoth of a card. But overall, I think that's a good fight, in my opinion. Lamont Roach has been fighting. It has been going on a huge wave of momentum in the last couple of years. And, that is I think that's going to be a really heated rivalry, and I think the promotion is going to be pretty solid. You know, it's one of those, you know, Tank Davis is from Baltimore, Lamont Roach is from DC. There's already kind of that regional beef that already there, which kind of surprised me why they're not holding the fight in Baltimore, because I think that would be a huge sellout. Like, you do that fight at Camden Yards, or if you do that fight in at Raven State, the Baltimore Raven Stadium, I think they could do easily 20,000-30,000 people in that stadium. I think, in my opinion, the last time Gervonta Davis was in Baltimore, it was a massive sellout. It was, and I think right now Gervonta Davis is a bigger star than he was a few years ago. So, but either way, during that fight in Houston, I think that's still going to sell out very, very well.
I wanted to ask you, because whenever you mention Tank, I immediately think he's one of the biggest live ticket sellers out there. Mm-hmm. He also does very well on pay-per-view in an age where, you know, the way that the structure is today with DAZN and ESPN Plus and, you know, these other ways to buy shows. Yeah, you know, the days of the $1 million buy show is probably gone. But at the same time, the people who can draw, who can sell tickets, they actually are even more special in today's day and age. So I wanted to ask you now, because last time we talked, Anthony Joshua, crazy Daniel Dubois, crazy attendance, crazy gate. It's very clear that in his region, in his area, Anthony Joshua is a giant ticket seller and a giant draw. Now, you bring Anthony Joshua to LA or to New York or to Las Vegas, not as much, because he is not an American fighter. He fights in his region and he is just an insane draw. In the United States, who would you consider to be the top five draws? And we can kind of try and figure out pay-per-view ticket seller and kind of combine them in some way. But if you had to put your money on, you know, this person can actually sell out a fight in Las Vegas, or this person can actually sell out a fight in their hometown, who are you betting on in those cases?
So, you know, Canelo obviously is number one. I think that's without question.
Yeah.
I mean, the Edgar Berlanga fight, you know, the fact that it was going up against, you know, the UFC at the Sphere show, like head to head, and it still did like a really, like, given the competition in Vegas, it did I thought it did really good numbers at the gate. I think it's, God, I can't remember. It was something like 17 million. It was somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah.
It was in that ballpark. You know, Canelo, his star power has diminished a little bit, but it's not to the point where you can say, well, Canelo is definitely not the biggest draw in the U.S. He's still for sure the biggest draw. You know, Tank, as I was just mentioning, he's at the point where, at least from a live game perspective, he's a very safe bet as like one of the best draws in the U.S., especially when it comes to like putting him in a variety of different markets, because he sold out Atlanta, he sold out Baltimore, the fight with Frank Martin in Vegas did excellent. I think it was like a 14.3 million gate in Vegas for a guy against a guy that really was not much of a known fighter to the masses in Frank Martin. You know, he's headlined shows in LA, in the LA area a few times. So, you know, Tank has definitely done really, really well in the last few years. A very well promoted guy. I think they've also, you know, Floyd put his promotional eggs in the Tank Davis basket, and it worked out. I would say it's safe to assume it has absolutely worked out. Crawford is, I you know, Crawford hasn't fought much since the Errol Spence fight, but, you know, you consider the Errol Spence fight and then his most recent fight against Israel Makhachev, it did pretty well. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it definitely sold over 10,000 tickets in LA, which was, it was quite a bit of a gamble. But I also think that it probably was going to be doing well, because you had the Saudi Arabia Riyadh season backing because I mean, I want to say, and I'm just trying to look at numbers. Yeah. So it did. Yeah, no, the Crawford Makhachev fight, 17,799 tickets sold, 3,900 comps. So that's over 20,000. That's with an $8.4 million gate, which, that's really good. And, you know, the one knock on Crawford throughout the, you know, for the last few years was mainly like, it's not much of a pay-per-view draw.
Right.
You know, because
Bob Arum, his own promoter at the time, said that.
Oh, yeah. The Victor Postol pay-per-view that Bob Arum put on HBO, that was such an absolute misfire, because it sold so poorly that Bob Arum did not want to pull the trigger on Crawford doing pay-per-view fights for years. It was that bad, the buy rate. And it wasn't until it had to be the, if I remember correctly, the Sean Porter fight from a few years back, that it wasn't until back then that the Crawford would be on pay-per-view. And listen, beating Spence the way he did, that obviously going to now elevate. I think that definitely elevated folks to folks' opinion of Crawford as being sort of this must-see guy. Because like on television in the live gate, he was in terms of attracting an audience, the attendance numbers were always good for Crawford, and the television ratings that he would bring when he was fighting on ESPN, it was almost unrivaled for against any boxer doing those kinds of numbers on cable. He was doing like, you know, his fights were peaking in the 3-4 million viewers for when he was fighting on ESPN. So, I mean, he is a draw. The one knock was on the pay-per-view side of things. And, you know, it's slowly kind of shedding that, especially with the idea that, you know, you could, the new challenges at 154 pounds with, like, some of these fresher, younger names, and also the possibility that you can eventually build to a rematch with Spence if he wins the title at 154 pounds, which is, it's possible. So that's always something to always be on the lookout for. There's a couple of other names that I think would are really good draws. One name that I think, and I guess in a way this is sort of more of a regional draw, because they really haven't done his, they really haven't promoted his fights, you know, outside of like the Arizona area in terms of like putting him out there. But Jesse Bam Rodriguez is really, it's a really, first of all, he's an excellent fighter, one of the top young pound for pound guys in the sport. I mean, kid's only 24 years old, and he's already won titles in multiple weight classes. And his resume is like, I think 20-0 right now. His resume is almost that of a Hall of Fame level type of stuff. And again, he's only 24 years old. The fight he had with Juan Francisco Estrada, which you know, on paper, getting into the fight, you think, oh my God, this is like a fight of the year candidate. That did close to 8,000, which is not an easy feat. Arizona, it's not exactly a state where you can put a fight there and you'll attract, you know, five figures in attendance. So Bam is definitely another draw. You know, and once you kind of go past, you know, get into the five, you know, top five, outside of the top five, it can be really rough, because you're not seeing a lot of guys, you know, headlining these big shows in Vegas or in New York. You know, honestly, it remains to be seen what happens with Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney, because they haven't fought since they fought each other. You know, Ryan, I don't know what the hell's going to happen with him. Devin is still, you know, it's still his, you know, his next fight and everything is kind of still up in limbo, because he's still, obviously, the way that fight went, obviously, it was later declared a no contest, but the way he looked against Ryan, but then, you know, the stink, I think, is still kind of there, unfortunately, with Devin.
Yeah, he got damaged, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, you know, which is a shame, because, like, Devin was on his way to being a real big star. I mean, when he fought in the Bay Area,
yeah,
he did really good numbers. He did excellent numbers in terms of attendance. So, you know, it is, you know, U.S. side, I think, there still kind of remains to be seen with a couple of guys who have either not fought in a while or they were coming off poor performances. So Spence is another one that, you know, jury's still out on how he looks, you know. And it's funny, we were talking about the Anthony Joshua, you know, for people who don't know. And it's funny, the last time we actually did a stream, we were joking about the turnstile numbers.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, now we definitely have the numbers for the Daniel Dubois fight, which was 85,466. Wow. It's not 96,000 as people were saying, but I mean, you know, this the number they announced is never the announced
right
number. But 85,466 is, you know, if you were to kind of take apply that same percentage to the Tyson Fury Dillian White fights, which the announced attendance was 94,000, or the Joshua Klitschko fight, which is 90,000. You know, if you kind of apply that same kind of percentage, you know, then we're looking at, you know, in the low 80,000. Yeah, low 80,000. So Joshua and Dubois is still, you know, probably the most attended fight in UK history. Second in the history of Europe, which is no small feat. In, you know, Joshua is still, you know, we'll see what happens with Joshua's career. It's weird. They've been Joshua's been dropping weird hints about his next fight. Like, is it like, it's literally like, oh man, you guys are not gonna believe who I'm fighting next. I mean, you're gonna, when you see this, you're gonna think, oh man, Joshua, you're gonna, AJ, this is a terrible idea. I'm like, and like, I think you're still suffering a little bit from the shots Dubois been hit. First of all, no way you should be fighting this soon.
Yeah, no way.
You know, and then, you know, go to Japan and Inoue, you know, man single-handedly brought boxing back to the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
For the first time since Buster Douglas. So
tremendous.
That alone is a feat in and of itself.
The elephant in the room, even though he's you know, a little bit of a circus fighter, where would you put Jake Paul?
That's in it. It's weird because honestly, the thing with Jake Paul is that right now, there's not that much attention. I mean, aside from the Mike Tyson fight, but there really not a lot of people have been following his fights as much as it was, you know, when he was fighting these former UFC
right
guys, when he was fighting Tyron Woodley, when he was fighting Nate Diaz. You know, it's, but I can tell you, I mean, I went to the Jake Paul Tyron Woodley fight in Cleveland a few years back. Come for you guys,
but yeah,
for you guys, and the place was absolutely packed. You know, Jake is a draw. I don't think he's as strong a draw now as he was. I mean, like, let's be honest. If Jake was fighting literally almost like 99.99% of combat sports athletes, they would not be doing the fight in AT&T Stadium. They would not be doing the fight on Netflix,
right?
For sure. I mean, the fight that's coming up, it's only because, holy crap, we're seeing Mike Tyson in a professional, you know, non-exhibition fight for the first time in many years. And it's one of those things where you just can't help but watch. And you're kind of like just rubbernecking off the side of the row, seeing like what the hell is going to happen. And also, you know, Jake's been, you know, smartly kind of putting fights, like, for example, his last fight in Puerto Rico. He made himself the main event, but the real attraction was Amanda Serrano because it was kind of like a homecoming for her. Mm-hmm. So he's been, you know, promoting this smartly the last few years, where it's like, okay, not everything has to be off of my back. I can still draw a really big crowd if I play this smartly. And he's been kind of hedging his bets on Amanda Serrano. And I think the fact that you're putting the Katie Taylor rematch as the chief support fight for the Mike Tyson fight, it's not an accident. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows that, you know, a lot of he needs something to actually bring in the hardcore boxing people who kind of just say, you know, Jake Paul's not a real boxer. And like, okay, but we're going to give you a real fight. And it's a rematch of a fight, of a great fight that everyone wanted to see these two women run it back. So, you know, I think that the way he's promoted this fight with building the card has been very, very good, because Amanda Serrano is definitely not someone that you can just say, well, I don't need to watch a fight. No, Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor put on great performances and put on great fights. The first fight was phenomenal. So, of course, like, you'd be dumb as a boxing fan to not watch the second fight.
What did you think about what Bob Arum said about Mike Tyson? And I will read this quote for the people watching and listening who may not have heard it, but Bob Arum was asked about Mike Tyson, and he said, a 58-year-old guy, no matter how good they were, no matter how athletic they were, are not going to be able to fight. You can't throw punches like you're supposed to. You can't do a lot of things. I hope Mike doesn't get hurt, but I really give him relatively no chance. You lose that muscle memory as you get older.
I kind of agree with him. Everybody, a lot of people think of like, and they're kind of being swayed by some of the clips that like Tyson team throws on social media when it's like good bursts of energy. But you kind of notice a lot of those clips, they don't go past like a few seconds. I'm like, that's for a reason, because Mike can't go longer than a few. But let's be, look, even in his prime, what was one of the biggest knocks on Tyson? Guy doesn't have the biggest tank in terms of stamina. So well,
a lot of that was because he wasn't really training for these fights, because he was killing these dudes in minutes. And even, you know, even when he had to win, like you look at that second Holyfield fight. Now, some of that may have just been Holyfield mentally just destroyed him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Mike got in really good shape for that fight. I don't know if it was, you know, just pro wrestler shape or not, or if he really was, you know, banging it out in the gym. But, you know, I'm sure he had some really bad habits because of how successful he was. And then you add to that, this dude hasn't had, you know, he had the Roy Jones Jr. fight, right?
Yeah, but, you know, it wasn't a fight. I mean, they were kind of going at it like, it was almost like a sparring session.
Yeah, it was like a sparring session. Was that the last one that he had, or did he actually do another one after that?
If I remember correctly, I think that was the last one. And
did they never do the Holyfield fight?
I don't think so. Not that I can remember. I think there were plans. I think there had been like after the Roy fight. Yeah, I think after the Roy fight, there were plans. There were plans to try to get Tyson in, but like, if I remember correctly, the story was, you know, Tyson was not a big fan of the people that were kind of running the show. It was like it was a circus. He didn't want to get involved much with them. So I think the Roy Jones exhibition was the last time he was like actually stepped into the ring. And
like a Vitor Belfort like fight Holyfield or something like that.
Yeah, something like yeah, yeah, yeah. God,
those pandemic fights, man, some crazy.
Oh my God, I'm so glad it was a hell of a drug. I mean, remember one of those like Triller circus fights. I remember one where like Oscar De La Hoya was in there, and he was like, dude was sky high. And yes. Like, dude, and like, it was unreal.
I remember that.
It was unreal.
And then there were moments where it seemed like Oscar himself was trying to get involved back in. Like, remember he had those pictures of him with his shirt off, and he's throwing punches, and he's got like those old man fake abs on it.
Yeah. No one was buying that. No one was buying, you know, Oscar seriously stepping into the ring, even in an exhibition fight.
Yeah.
So like, you put all that together, and the fact that Tyson hasn't fought a professional fight in almost 20 years, he's fast approaching 60 years old. And the last time he fought, he got decimated by Kevin McBride and then just got shellacked by Danny Williams.
That was sad.
The last time he won a fight was Clifford Etienne. You know how that was 21 years ago. I was 8 when that happened.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Is there a possibility that he and Jake Paul have some sort of handshake agreement that they're going to go 75%? Let's say this. What does Jake gain by knocking out Tyson? Or does he gain anything by knocking out Tyson?
There is people that do believe Tyson's going to beat Jake Paul, like legitimately believe they're going to beat Jake Paul.
Yeah, if Tyson was to win this fight, I think the first thing that people would say is it was fixed. But the second thing would be that, you know, it's kind of like the Rocky Balboa story in a way, where
he wins in the deleted, in like the special deleted scene where he gets the decision over Mason Dixon. I'm like, I'm so glad that was not the canon ending. I'm so glad.
But Tyson does have more to gain than Jake Paul in winning the fight. Jake is doing it because he is promoting, and he also has the undercard fight that is the real fight, and he brings the most eyeballs possible to that fight. It's pretty smart way to do it. Mm-hmm. It's a freak show, but I do wonder, like, I think the worst thing in the world that can happen if you are a sports fan, now maybe if you don't like Mike Tyson, or you believe Mike Tyson deserves, you know, a bad ending in some way, maybe you'll find him getting knocked out poetic. But that is just going to be sad. Like, it's going to be a sad ending for Netflix if Jake Paul is standing over Mike Tyson at the end of round one and Tyson's just knocked out. Spent. Like, I would rather see Tyson go out on his stool if he is going to go out. I think everybody would. But I just wonder, like, what is, if you're Jake Paul and you're putting this whole thing together, what do you think is the right ending to this? Just him retiring, Tyson on his stool?
Yeah. I mean, I would think that, you know, Tyson retiring on his stool would probably be the best case scenario for him, because you can say that, you know, I stopped Mike Tyson, I retired him for good, but you also kind of leave a little bit of dignity for Tyson, you know, not laying on his back and everything.
Yeah.
You know,
and the worst case is if Tyson's just knocked out cold like that, there's no way that Netflix wants that, I don't think.
I mean, there is something to the image of a near 60-year-old man on a stool from being by a guy less than half of his age.
That's like elder abuse.
But blame the Texas Commission blame the Texas Commission, which, funny enough, not the first time they've let an elderly man who hasn't fought in many, many years fight by a guy significantly younger, and it ended with the guy getting knocked down like one or two rounds. It actually happened a few years ago, believe it or not. It is tough because, like, at the same time, like, you know, if this ends up being like a gigantic success, you obviously want to keep the momentum going with your top boxing star, you know, which being Jake Paul. And I'm assuming that, you know, Jake would probably want to parlay the success of this event into doing more shows with Netflix, kind of like what he's doing with The Zone, where he's got, you know, these like club level shows where he's just bringing some, you know, prospects that he's signing and put them in showcase fights, which, you know, they're entertaining fights. But obviously the money is clearly with Netflix, because the audience that they're going to get a bigger audience thanks to WWE going to Netflix. And I do think Jake Paul sees potential in that type of crossover, especially with his brother in WWE. There's a lot of crossover potential. So I think Jake Paul, I think he's going to try his best to dominate the fight. You know, knocking out Tyson cold, I don't see that happening. I say that, but he's also knocked out a few MMA fighters much younger than Tyson and in better shape out cold. So yes. I don't know. It is tough. You know, you do pose a really good question. But I think honestly, best case scenario is kind of how you laid it out. Just Tyson retiring on his stool. Which even then, that's still a little bit sad, because like this guy was like the most feared man on the planet, and now you're seeing an old man just on his stool, not being able to continue. But I honestly can't see there being a true happy ending. Because this is a man almost in his 60s. There's almost no way. Like, if this was pro wrestling, you can kind of script it in a way where you can book this in a smart way. But this is a boxing fight. So I don't know how you're supposed to kind of try to hope for the best ending. Whatever we get is whatever we're going to get.
So most of the people who listen to this, those who are not watching live, this fight may have already happened, but there's a Tim Tzu fight that is actually on Amazon Prime on Saturday.
No $80 pay-per-view price tag.
Is that how much it is?
No, and for the usual Amazon Prime pay-per-views, I believe so. I'm just saying this one's for free. Well, if you have to pay for Amazon Prime, but
oh, so it's like a free Amazon Prime show.
Yep. Funny enough, the first free Amazon Prime show that they do, when they were like promised, like we're gonna have you know occasional pay-per-views, we're gonna have a lot of non pay-per-view shows. This is the first one. This whole endeavor started in March. So better late than ever, I guess.
What is it going to be? A good one?
You know, this is it's an interesting fight. There's an interesting narrative with Tim Tzu, obviously coming off the loss to Sebastian Fedora. Now, obviously, most people, I'm not saying they're making excuses for Tim Tzu, but they are justifying Tim Tzu losing to Sebastian Fedora. Because a lot of people, when, you know, Sebastian Fedora was going to fight, Tim Tzu was going to fight Keith Thurman. And when Thurman went down, they replaced him with Sebastian Fedora with only a few weeks' notice. And, you know, the vast majority of people thought this is a bad idea because stylistically and physically, this is not the guy you want to face on a few weeks' notice in Sebastian Fedora. And, you know, what happened, you know, they had a war, but Fedora came out on top beating Tim Tzu. So the interesting thing is, you know, what's going to happen? How does Tim Tzu bounce back from his first pro loss? What adjustments is he going to make? There's kind of a weird little narrative because he is the son of the former undisputed champion Costa Tzu. Mm-hmm. And Costa is going to be in attendance for the fight, which is kind of a bit of a rarity. It's actually a bit of a rarity seeing Costa in attendance for Tim's fight, because Tim has always kind of wanted to like create his own legacy. And obviously the Tzu name is going to stay with him forever and him being tied to his Hall of Fame dad. But the fact that now it's like you're seeing, you know, Costa in actual in attendance, that could be an interesting kind of narrative to see how mentally, how does Tim fight? You know, from a boxing perspective, it's actually not a bad fight. You know, there are stylistically, you can make the case that, you know, both fighters have some advantage in this fight. You know, Murtaz Aliyev is a strong puncher and a very aggressive fighter who, you know, can potentially take advantage of Tim Tzu's, you know, occasional defensive lapses that, you know, you'll see in almost every fight where he looks great, but then he just kind of takes the foot off the gas pedal defensively for a few seconds and kind of lets his opponent at least recover a little bit. And Murtaz Aliyev is not the kind of guy that you want to do that. But on the other hand, Murtaz, I mean, when you see Bakram Murtaz Aliyev, he's not the cleanest puncher. He's also not exactly the most elegant fighter out there. It's kind of, you know, some of his punches he throws a little bit wild, leaves himself open. His hands are, you know, hand placement is not like always there as far as, you know, if he gets countershot, you know, he doesn't have much defense against it. And, you look at the highlight reel for Murtaz Aliyev, like he's a guy that, you know, you see he's crushing all these guys, but, you know, it's guys who are not who are not good counter punchers. And Tim Tzu is a very sharp puncher. Mm-hmm. You know, if Tim Tzu, I think it's going to come down to, you know, does Tim Tzu catch on to Murtaz Aliyev's lack of defensive abilities, or at least from what we have seen, because Murtaz Aliyev has not been, you know, in that many hard fights. Tim Tzu's been in a lot of hard fights, and he's been able to bounce back pretty well mid-fight to adversity. So it's a question of, does Murtaz Aliyev step up to the plate, or does do the holes in his game, you know, really shine brightly when you're going up against a top guy in Tim Tzu? Because Tim Tzu's one of those guys where, you know, you'll have your chances to gain the upper hand, but you have to be almost perfect throughout the entire fight in order to beat Tim Tzu. And I have not seen that type of ability coming out of Murtaz Aliyev. But granted, Murtazali have not been afforded much of a chance to actually do much. I mean, the best name that he's got on his resume is Jack Colque, who's a good fighter. But at this stage of Jack Colque's career, I mean, it's not really something you can say, oh, it's a win that catapults him into the elite status. So, it's interesting. It's a very interesting fight. And look, you have a Prime membership, you might as well watch it. I actually don't know if they're going to air this on Twitch, because I know with the Thursday night football games, they air it on Prime. But in the U.S., they actually air it for free on Twitch. So I'm actually curious. And I've always said this with PBC. You should be doing whether it's the free pay-per-view undercards, the pre-pay-per-view fights, or even these free fights. Put them on Twitch, expose them to a younger audience. And, that's how you grow. That's how you grow the sport, is getting eyeballs from the younger viewership.
All right, let's end this here. But I wanted to mention a couple of the key dates. We talked about Tyson and Jake Paul, and maybe if you have the time, maybe that would be a good time to do a recap, because after that fight, there's just going to be so much interest, I think, in the just from a casual standpoint, that I think people are going to be interested. Whether it's good or not, I think we both agree that it's probably not going to be a good fight, but it does have the semi-main, which should be really good and should be a really good way to expose top-level women's boxing to an audience that probably doesn't even know that women box. So that'll be really interesting. And then at the same time, we can kind of preview Usyk and Fury, if it is still happening at that time. I think we think it'll happen. It is only 2 months away now, which is ridiculous.
It feels weird that it really hasn't been much buzz to it.
And then also, like you mentioned, Christmas Eve in Tokyo, Inoue and Sam Goodman at the Tokyo Dome, which will be quite interesting as well.
Christmas Eve is great. Now, here's the thing. Might want to hold off on the Sam. I mean, it being Sam Goodman.
Okay.
So it was expected it was going to be Sam Goodman, but there's been two things that kind of been brought up. One, they have not been able to iron out a deal. So the IBF is like, all right, wrap it up, we're putting this entire fight up for a purse bid, and any promoter can swoop in and buy the promotional rights to the fight. But also, going back to what we were talking about much earlier about that internal rotation with Undisputed Champions having multiple titles and Extension Ibani having no mandatory challengers, Murjan Akhmadaliev has kind of now entered the fight and saying, I've been waiting an extremely long time. It is my turn. And now he's trying to force the WBA's hand to basically tell Inoue, hey, you got to fight Murjan Akhmadaliev now. So now it's kind of remained to be seen. I mean, it's likely going to be either of those two, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's 100% now for sure going to be Sam Goodman. Either way, I think Inoue is going to be the favorite. Akhmadaliev is probably the more intriguing fight. Sam Goodman, it's kind of hard to get excited after his most recent performance, where it was funny. The idea was to have Sam Goodman earlier this year fight Inoue, and it just didn't happen. And then he just takes a stay busy fight, back in July, and he just looked okay. But right now, Sam Goodman, he'd be a fool to not do everything in his power to try to end, to win the fight, to get that Inoue fight. Because, we don't know how much longer Inoue is going to stay at 122. So if Inoue decides to leave the division before Goodman gets a chance, that is a career-high payday that he left on the table because of that.
Well, that is a good way to end this, and I will say, Carlos, thank you for doing this experiment with me. Not only is it on the BSPN YouTube channel, not only is it on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel, it is also going to be on the audio networks of both shows. So if people hearing you for the first time and they want to follow whatever you're doing, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at at Carlos Toro Media. I'm slowly getting back into the groove thing with sharing my thoughts on boxing. I also stream on Twitch. I do video game speedrunning, although with the new Undisputed boxing game, I'm tempted to also stream a little bit of that.
Did you buy it?
I've not yet. I think when I was trying to like wait and see what the price is going to be for like that special deluxe edition see what was going to happen. And I think honestly, I just completely forgot about it. So that's
we kind of talked about it on the last show. We may have spoken Fight Night's comeback into existence. Did you hear about that? The idea that EA might do another boxing game now.
I did not hear.
I think it's just on the heels of the interest in this Undisputed game. They're like, oh, like people want a boxing game. Well, we have the rights to a boxing game, and you know, we might as well look into it. But I saw Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful. He had a nice review of the game on Twitter. You know, it was bullet pointed, but he sounds like he spent a lot of time with it. My buddy Randy also has had it since the beta copy, all the way back then. He was like a tester for them or something. So I think there's interest there because now that it's in the full release, and look, man, you know, they could add tons of stuff, right? Like you could continually add things to the game if you wanted, and software upgrades are easy. You know, I play two games right now. I play NBA 2K and I play NCAA football, and they're fixing bugs often, and they're just uploading, you know, new things. So essentially that boxing game kind of could exist indefinitely if they wanted it to. So I think that's the next thing, is how much are they going to invest in the improvements? And if they do invest in them, then I think that says good for what they're doing, and hopefully the people enjoy it and the people buy it.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it. Okay, that deluxe pack has it's $70, which isn't terrible, and it comes with like DLC already like included. This is actually really interesting. Oh man, they're doing the thing in 2K where you get like, you're not just getting fighters, but you're getting fighters from X year, like these go like with different stats. So they have Tyson Fury from 2009. So presumably the version that beat Klitschko. Canelo Alvarez from 2011, which is kind of a weird arbitrary year to go to. I'm trying to think.
That's pre Mayweather loss, right?
I want to say, yeah. Get the Canelo Alvarez. Oh yeah, the Canelo that beat Austin Trout. Yeah, that's totally worth the DLC. that's the version. If we have to get Canelo Alvarez from any year, it's definitely. No, the Austin Trout fight was 2013. No, never mind. We're getting the Canelo Alvarez that beat Kermit Cintron.
Like the rookie Canelo.
This is essentially rookie Canelo. This is like 2011 Canelo was his first year as a world champion.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And Ali from 1964.
I mean, I guess if you dress them like they looked, it could actually be kind of intriguing. And see, the thing is if you do stuff like that, then I want the rookie mode. I want like the early days of Canelo, the career mode or whatever. But yeah, that's asking for a lot. But anyways, so I appreciate you doing this, and you did write a bit of a preview for Fight Game Media. I begged you to do that, you know, just to keep your chops. You know, you got to make sure you don't get rusty. And you know, we'll do some fun stuff like that for other big fights that are upcoming, because you know this stuff, and you know, really, from the perspective you mentioned your age a couple of times, you know, from the perspective of a young person who really enjoys boxing, there are not many of you. And so that's why I appreciate your voice, because you have the knowledge of history and you have the knowledge of how the whole thing works from the political aspect, but also you're a younger person, and we don't see very many young people. Boxing is not a young person sport. So I really appreciate your your perspective on the sport. And so I always am trying to I know you're a fan and I know you're going to watch everything. You're like a super fan, but I just want to keep your fingers, you know, loose and keep typing every once in a while just to make sure that you don't lose it in case there's an opportunity that arises down the line and someone goes, you need someone to write about
keep myself
boxing.
in ring shape.
Yeah. I'm like, Carlos, we need to get Carlos on your website. Go pay Carlos to do this. So that's we'll keep you in shape.
Only 5.5 more months until I officially leave my 20s. So
I'm sure the average age of boxing fans is probably like somewhere in the 60s.
Oh, God. Yeah.
All right. So thank you to Carlos. I am Double G. We will see when we see you. Peace out.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.